Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Talk to Me, Sis. It's a full squad this week, and it's not a takeover. Woo! I've not been kidnapped by Connor. Nikki, welcome home.
Yay, so glad to be back. So glad that we both have a week in our own homes and our own counties and states, so we're not all over the world.
Excellent. And we are here with beautiful Shalini Solomon, who is a certified behavior analyst. But I'm going to let you introduce yourself and tell all of our wonderful listeners, subscribers about you, Shalini. And we should also tell the funny story of how we met.
Yes. So yeah, my name is Shalini. I'm a board certified behavior analyst. I live and work out here in Hawaii. I'm originally from Florida. And you want me to say how we first met? I love that story.
Yeah,
intro.
This is a great story. It's a great story.
Yeah. So in general, I'm a regular working person. I love the show. I was at dinner with my mom, just a very casual Tuesday night dinner. And I scanned over it and I was like, Mom, that's Connor and Tanner from Love on the Spectrum. And she's like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah. And of course, we're all the way out in Hawaii. And I know you guys don't live here. So I was like, yeah, Mom, that is them. She's like, yeah, go check and say hi. So I raced up the stairs and saw it was all of you guys. And it was like a dream come true getting to meet you guys, see you here in Hawaii. And it was absolutely just like pure bliss.
Aww. It was. I also think it was complete kismet, meant to be, stars aligning, because
absolutely.
It was great to meet you in Hawaii. So it was just fun for us to be in Hawaii. Yes. But I think when we just started quickly speaking, and I mean, that mm-hmm. was a quick exchange, and we just unpacked really quickly, like what you did. And then you started to just share a little bit about what your passion is and where you want to go. And yeah. Nikki and I don't know, speak to you, Nikki, but I was pretty moved.
Oh, absolutely. It's such a needed topic.
Yes.
So at this point of the podcast, I do want to say, if you are sensitive or small ears should not be listening right now, this is an adult chat. Yes. We just want like listener discretion on this episode. Yes. If you can hear this, if you've got small ears, maybe push pause. This is an adult conversation. Or if you are sensitive and we're going to be using terms, we're going to be talking bodies, sex, mm-hmm. masturbation. We're getting into it we're getting into it and we're not running away from it. But if you are, if you're not into this or if it's just not for you, this is probably a good time to stop and catch us another time. But we're excited. We're here to help you, parents. I know it's needed. I actually had a personal exchange in the last month with something similar with this, with a small child and a family in a school. So I'm excited, but again, viewer discretion, listener discretion, if you have small ears, turn us off. We'll see you next time, but stick around if not. And then without further ado, Nikki, do you want to start us with questions or how do you want to go?
Yeah, well, I mean, Shalini, tell us, since we just kind of gave the build up here, mm-hmm. tell us a little bit about what your area of focus is, so our listeners know what we're referring to.
Yes. So my area of focus, I primarily work with children and teens and adults diagnosed with autism. So my primary focus, I'm working in the schools, the clinic, in-home setting, and my overall goal is to just improve that quality of life for that child, for that student. I'll probably refer to them as learner to keep it broad for this podcast. So I specialize within ABA therapy, so that's applied behavior analysis. And within that field, I'm wanting to and branching into that area of that sexual education. So I know that's what we connected with, whereas on the show, you do lots of the dating. You guys are talking with your sons about dating, love, some of those social cues that you have to talk about. And with that comes the love and sex that is a weird topic. Not everyone wants to talk about it. And I said, after working in this area for so long, this is a needed part for so many different ages. And I feel like, yes, I'm ready to dive in. So kind of like you said, if you're not used to hearing this, I feel very comfortable speaking about it because I want for others to get more comfortable talking about sexual education, especially for the neurodivergent crowd.
So needed. And you did bring up the point about where we are, where Nikki and I are at the stage with our young men is dating, kissing, consent, mm-hmm. sex, all of these parts of that. But there is the sexual development, puberty, confusion, discovering their body. And then also, I would even say some of our more complex needs individuals in our community, maybe not having the social cues to mm-hmm. know, okay, I'm maybe doing something private in a public space. And it's just that to me is something that I, you know, whether it be at school or just somewhere in public, how can we help? Where do we start? And we may need to have you back. I mean, we may not be able to touch on all of this. And I don't know where you see the greater need. I don't know if we should start developmentally or just dive into where we are. I just feel like this is such an important topic and I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think exactly starting that developmentally. So you guys, your kids are a lot older, but you know, some of the listeners speaking might have a young child, they might have the same age, a teenager. And so kind of like, where does it start is that big question, you know, when do I start to bridge that topic? And honestly, my honest answer is from they are super young, from like 6 months old, you know, we're teaching the body parts. This is my hand. These are my eyes. And we need to know what are these private body parts. So I say that really starts from that young developmental age where we are using those real terms about what our body parts are. So I'm very big on speaking about, you know, we're not saying, oh, this is my cookie, my special area, but this is a penis. This is a vagina. So labeling those body parts anatomically is going to be a good starting point. And then using in terms of who has access to this on our bodies, because a lot within our population with a neurodivergent crowd, we're teaching them a lot to advocate for themselves, but also to say, to tolerate like no, right? So let's say they want something, you're saying, oh, nope, that's not available. You want for them to be able to know that right and wrong of when is a situation that's a little bit more of a worrisome, like, oh no, I'm in a situation, I don't know what this is, or what is this happening with my body? So that whole puberty, because puberty is weird already from the beginning with everybody. So when you do put in those different, with the neurodivergent crowd, the different social cues, the different things that they're accessing, you do want to take that into account because puberty is weird and we're going to have to maybe talk about it more explicitly. So kind of like if I think back to like my own childhood, my own puberty times, you know, there's things I'd rather talk to my friend about than go to my mom. But they, neurodivergent crowd, if they're a child or a teenager, adult, might not have those people. So like, where can we do that?
So, and then what about, because I never want to forget about this section of our community, like when you're navigating it with maybe a child who with, you know, more communication issues or less words or, you know, nonverbal, non-speaking, how do you have experience in that group? And how do you help at least teach parents how to help navigate some of that stuff that may be happening, let's say, at church or in school or something?
Yeah, I think in terms of if you have maybe a learner that's not so much that vocal communication, so they may not have the understanding level to say, this is your correct body part, this is what you can do and cannot do. I'd say if you're wanting to simplify it, visuals are a really good starting point. So using a visual, a real life looking visual, you can have the cartoon ones as well, but you want to go with real life pictures. That is a good way, especially for those early learners, to know what this is. So a visual might be of that body part. And then in terms of like when you're going to church, when you're going to the grocery store, that is looking in terms of public and private. So there's things that we can do with our body in private and there's things that we can't do with our bodies in public. So I might get, you know, it might be a simple visual that is saying, I get dressed in my bedroom so that your learner knows, okay, in the bedroom, that is a private area. I'm allowed to take my clothes off and kind of do whatever I want. But then we're going to have to be very explicit and say in the public section. So say we have a visual, we have public and private. In that public, I will keep clothes on. Another thing is also using the language that what you are going to do. So in simple terms, instead of saying don't run, you want to say walking feet, right? So what should I be hearing that I should be doing? Walking feet. Because if you tell me don't run, I'm like, okay, what should I be doing? So you want to say, you know, the thing you want to do, vocalize more about what they are doing. So that is, I keep my clothes on at church. I keep my clothes on in school. If I feel uncomfortable down there, I'm going to do this. So having like a trusted adult that learner knows. And then if you want to break it down even more, so let's say your learner is still having a different understanding level where you need to break it down even more. It might have to be so explicit that you're teaching them almost like a hand swat almost away from like, nope, you don't touch me there. So you have to start with those basic levels. And the biggest thing is meeting your learner where they're at rather than trying to get them to a specific level of what we're supposed to be. So there are these societal norms we have. There is this expectation you want for your child, but you have to start by meeting them where they're at. And how can I break this down more so that they're going to have an understanding basic level?
I think that's so well said. And I wanted our parents to hear that, or the caregivers, yes, or teachers, meeting them where they're at. Now, in terms of these visuals that are accurately depicted, and are there professional resources and places parents or teachers can find these pictures? Because, you know, I, again, with the sensitivity of the topic and mm-hmm. the photos, obviously we just want to make sure parents are finding the right tools.
Yes, yes. A big resource that I personally love is Teachers Pay Teachers. So these are visuals, these are materials made by teachers and other professionals for other teachers and professionals. So I like it because it's coming from, for example, if I were to make some in my field, exactly based off my experience, I can make a material that is like that. So that's a really good, easy teacher and parent-friendly resource, because also you should not want to or have to be spending tons of money for this.
Right.
So they have a lot of great free resources, things that are like under $10. It might be a digital download. You can print it out. And if you need to, you're posting it up in the house. We are posting it on the mirror in the bathroom about what we should be doing. So let's say we have a teenager and we're getting ready for school. You know, we have to get ready. I brush my teeth. I put on deodorant. I wipe my private parts when I'm in the shower. So maybe that visual, posting it so it's very much there, because the visual is going to be another outlet that your learner is going to have more so than the auditory. So us, if we, you know, we're talking, we're using lots of verbals and vocals with each other in a general sense when you're talking with people, but the visuals are going to reach another outlet that is another source, and it's going to be less of you also feeling like, oh, I feel like I'm always repeating myself, or I don't feel like it's getting to them, you know? The visual, right, you can use to teach it, and then you can review it, and then hopefully your learner on their own is then can remember, oh yes, you know, they can look to that visual. They don't have to have you, or they're not prompt dependent waiting on you to say, brush your teeth, or clean your private areas, something like that.
I love that. Tanner had the Clemson Life employed visual schedules for everything while he was there. His bathroom was full. Step one,
nice.
You put your deodorant. It really is so helpful. So you can find even very, I guess, private, personal on the Teachers Pay Teachers website.
Yes, I don't think you'll be able to find.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you'll be able to find those explicit. So within the sexual education, you may not find those explicit, but they definitely have, like, let's say for girls, they're going through their period. We can now make a task analysis, which is going to be where we're breaking down the steps of what we do. So the simple thing might be starting with, I see blood in my panties. And then the visual is get pad and open, and then put pad on panties. So you remove the paper, put pad on, pull up panties, and so that task analysis kind of breaks down exactly what they should be doing. So because things like the puberty that they're going through, that's going to be a physical change. And then you also have the emotional and the mental change as well.
Big time. Oh my goodness, yes.
So staying with all in this area, especially with younger kids or any age, middle school, high school, what do you think are some of the most common misconceptions that you're running across that people, parents, caregivers, or whoever, grandparents may have with sexuality in the neurodiverse community? You know, are there any misconceptions that you're commonly debunking or...
Yes, it's very much, you know, my child won't understand, or they will not care about this. So my experience definitely comes from being a BCBA in the field. And so it's not coming from a place where, as a parent with judgment. So when I do say this, I recognize that. And I say that it's thinking about what is going to be best for your child, and you might have to put aside your own discomfort with that as well.
Yeah.
So it's that misconception where, no, you know, they can't even do A or B or C in another area of life. Let's say they can't wash, you know, dishes. Why are they going to care about this? So it's that misconception that they're not understanding, they're unaware. And unless they are like hard of hearing or deaf, they are hearing what is around them. So there's a lot of information that is around that is very, it's even harder now to kind of shield your child from. So right. you definitely want to try to get in front of that. So, you know, it's our TV, the music, everywhere. You step outside, everything is everywhere. They have access in their phone. So, you know, you definitely put those parental guides and all of that, but you want to try to get ahead of that misinformation so that you're not instead of correcting misinformation, you are providing that correct information so that if your child comes to you like, oh, well, I heard this or I thought this, you're kind of getting ahead of it. Because I know the fear is going to be there where it's kind of like, oh, I don't want to bring this topic up with them. I don't want to put these ideas in their head. So it's right. kind of like getting in front of that and addressing it in sooner than later. And it might be putting aside that discomfort of like, you know, I didn't talk about to my parents about sex. How am I going to talk to my child about this? But, you know, would you rather them be comfortable and come to you about this or do something in a situation that they're unknown? Because we do know with the neurodivergent crowd, they are at a higher risk for abuse and exploitation. So that's mm-hmm. a big thing is that you want for them to have their own understanding of their body, their understanding so they have their own dignity, their safety, and that they are not put at risk for abuse or something where they are completely unaware.
Right. And, you know, what you just said, talking about that, you know, worrying that they're not aware or that they're not going mm-hmm. to, that was a big fear for us with Tanner, with his learning disabilities. But just as just a little, I mean, from a more experienced mom to the younger moms listening, the body's going to do what the body's naturally going to do, regardless of where we are intellectually.
Yes.
And we went into that and had to pivot very quickly. Because, you know, I would have loved for Tanner to have been a late bloomer. He was not. He was on the early side for boys, if anything. He started puberty around 12, which is definitely earlier for boys. And I found myself very quickly thrust into having to, like you said, I mean, discretion, mm-hmm. appropriateness, privacy, what we can do around our sisters, what we can do outside of your bedroom, what, you know, all those things came. So I can speak from experience that regardless of intellectual age, the body will do what the body's going to do.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You can't stop that.
You can't stop it. And it is so instinctive. And Tanner was my first boy. Obviously, mm-hmm. he's my second child, first male child. It was a whole different thing going through puberty, mm-hmm. male child, than a daughter. And, you know, definitely to all the moms of boys out there, you will do yourself a tremendous favor if, yes. like you just said, taking your advice, jump on it while they're young, start with that language, start making them feel comfortable with it, get rid of your own inhibitions because it doesn't get any easier.
Yes, yes.
Around you, it's not easier.
Yes.
Now, I know for our experience, me and I had three boys and one girl. So I was like kind of like more yeah. boy heavy on that was. I got a lot of help. We had a great pediatrician when they started to like get out of that baby phase. And she was always so great. You know, you go so much when they're young, but she was always so good about making sure with Connor, with all my kids when they were very young. And it helped spark the conversation for me mm-hmm. of just saying, hey, you're here with me. I'm asking you to take your clothes off or I'm a doctor. Your mom is here.
Right.
But if this is a safe situation, your mom's here, I'm a doctor, I'm needing to check you. If you're not in this situation, areas your bathing suit covers is off limit. You know, so, you know, that always, she kind of helped me learn how to speak to my kids about it a little bit in just checkups or if something was going on and she needed to check a sensitive area, she would always, before she touched them, say, this is why this is okay. I'm a doctor and your mom's right here.
Your mom's right here.
Nice.
That's
so great.
You know, and it was nice. Helping and it helped me kind of plant those seeds. Yeah. So
she was ahead of the game. That's awesome.
That's good. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. She stayed with us until they were like 18. So she was really good to help us with that.
Nice. Yeah. I think if anyone has any, if they have a child and they are seeking, they have other therapies. So say, let's say speech therapy, occupational therapy, if they can and they feel comfortable checking in with that other therapist, like, hey, do you have experience in this area or how can I talk to my child about this? So they may not have that extensive experience, but let's say you have a speech therapist and you want to say, how can I use the correct either vocal words or visuals to make sure that they're understanding me and what I'm saying and that I can understand what they're saying. So that might be if something is hurting them, if they have a feelings, any of those puberty feelings, like, you know, they're going to be mad, sad, frustrated. I know that you talked about that within the show, like, you know, Tanner is a very happy boy. We always see him. He's so happy, but he is going to also have those times as with everyone else that he's upset, he's frustrated. And you or me, you may not be able to even see it, you know, because he's kind of like, I need to be happy. So mm-hmm. it's making sure that they have an understanding as to if you feel like this, you can do this. I think that's a big reason why I'm branching into this area within the field, because I'm like, oh, there is a big need. Like, just the education of it for the learners and for the parents as well.
Very much, very much. I felt like, you know, when we hit the 12, 13 mark and the physical changes started to happen, and the particularly with boys, the unexpected things that come up, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep, yep.
At the most inopportune moments, I had to be just extremely blunt. I took Matt, Tanner, and his younger brother. We sat down, we had a talk, we talked about body parts. We talked about the fact that sometimes your body parts do things that you didn't necessarily intend for them to do, mm-hmm. and that what we're going to do, you know, when
nice.
That, and for me too, and I don't know if this will speak to anybody else, Lisa and I have talked about this at length, and because Lisa and I are in our 50s and we grew up, you know, born in the 70s, growing up in the 80s and 90s. I think a lot of people in our generation grew up with maybe a lot of shame around the mm-hmm. topics.
Yeah.
No, I did. I can only speak for myself, but just the religious environment I was brought up in. No shade to my upbringing, but I was. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. I was a lot of shame. It was very taboo. And I think that's another thing too. It's just for me, it was so important that my children do not walk into adulthood carrying shame, that they don't serve, and that there's no reason for them to be ashamed of their bodies. There's no reason to be afraid of your body. And I was always just felt very strongly that they had to understand that sexual maturity is a natural, normal thing to be celebrated. And it's totally going to happen to every one of us. And don't be afraid of it and don't back away from it. The more you understand it, the more in control you're going to be.
Yeah. So,
but it's such a hard thing to overcome when you've been raised to not talk about it. So I don't know. I just, to other parents, I mean, I know for me, I felt like it was a way I could sort of break that cycle, was to tell my own children, your body is beautifully made. Your body is wonderful. Your body's normal.
You know? I think
not be afraid of it.
Yes. I think going into also one of the misconceptions is that sometimes what our children are doing is it's inappropriate. And it's like, oh no, is this inappropriate or is just this not the right setting, right? So let's say you're going through puberty, and if boys, things start to happen, they're sitting in the middle of class, their body's doing something, what is happening down there? And, you know, a misconception is, oh no, this is inappropriate. And I think because of that shame that the adult might have, depending on, you know, wherever their upbringing is that they may go into flight or fight, and I'm like, oh, you know, go to the principal's office, you know, go to the principal's office or something. And so it's talking about that and letting them know that this is not inappropriate, this happens, and this is what we can do about it. So that might be, you know, letting them know if this happens and you're in a public setting, because we've clearly identified now that public and private, what do we do, right? So if we're at home in our bedroom and you want to take your clothes off to feel less restricted, you can. What are we going to do? We're going to make sure the door is closed. We're going to make sure that my friends are not over, because I might be hanging out with my friends in the bedroom. And I'm like, hey, guys, I'm in the bedroom. I can do it now. So being very explicit about that is, you know,
bedroom doing that alone. Seeing,
like, a bedroom alone, door shut, you know, not so like in you guys' case, you guys have multiple children. If Tanner or Connor's hanging out with their siblings in the bedroom, it wouldn't be like, okay, I'm in my bedroom. So very explicit. And then in that public setting, what are they going to do? So you're kind of like making a plan. So that might be like, go to the bathroom, you know, so we're using that language in terms of what to do. So you're correct. You don't want to do the shame, but exactly how you said it, my body is beautiful. My body is mine. I love my body, rather than saying those knots and then having them like to say, if this happens to my body, I can go to the bathroom, or having some kind of response that they can do, because that you don't want them to go into territory where, you know, things are sometimes only inappropriate because of our societal norms or legally. So let's say you have a learner and they get really excited when they see chocolate bars, right? You love chocolate. So we go to the grocery store and you see chocolate, your boy's going through puberty, you get excited. This is a visible thing. It's, you know, it's not, so you have to know, okay, I'm excited. I'm in a public setting. Can I just, you know, expose myself? No. And it's big on words. This is not inappropriate, but this is just not the right place.
Not the right place. I love
that. Yes. And this, the same thing that you said.
Yes.
And the same thing with the shame is that parents, sometimes they do have to just check themselves that making sure they're not making them feel shameful, right? Because it's where you might get scared and you're like, no, you can't do that. But just remembering, yeah, like, take a breath, and that you're explaining it to them, that they are learning. You're learning as a new parent how to handle this. They're learning everything about their body. And this is like everyone's first time anyways.
Exactly. That's so helpful. Here. I love that you're saying that, like, for the young mom, because you look at your little boy and you think this is never going to happen.
Never.
To him. And it's really disconcerting as the opposite gender parent.
I was a single mom with three boys. It was hard, but I also didn't have
the
husband in the next room to go, hey, your department. I had to make it my department. It was rough.
CEO.
Yeah. So as a single mom, and again, I had mostly boys, I had to keep saying, okay, well, I don't have that body part, but, you know, I would try to validate for them. I get that I'm not a dad or your dad or, but, I just want to say I am catching on, and I really want to make sure other people are hearing this, and it's helping me. Actually, right now, I'm learning something. I'm today years old. I love how you're talking in terms of telling them in a positive way, give the action to do. Don't say, don't do that. Because you're right. Well, then what do I do? We're leaving them no options. I like that you've said it more than once. I think I've heard you now three different occasions say,
I love it.
We're giving an action. We're giving a positive way to say, you can do this. This is what you do. We're walking here. We're doing this here. We're not just saying no or stop that and then giving no alternative or giving no plan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm catching it. And I just want to make sure everyone's catching that. Like,
yeah,
I'm learning that. And I can actually think I can employ a little bit this with Connor, because I think you get into your parental grooves and we all have bad habits. And Connor's a 26-year-old man, but he still lives under my roof. I mean, he's still, we spend a lot of FaceTime together. And I think I do go, hey, cut it out, stop that. But I'm not really giving an alternative of what I think should be happening.
Yeah, so, and that's across the board, not just this subject matter.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's so valuable.
Yeah. I love it here, especially here, because there are so many question marks. But I'm loving that nuance, and I'm catching that in your language. And I'm learning from that. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's an important one that like you said, everyone, if you have a young learner, older learner, is very much like, that's something I'm usually teaching, is especially in a school setting where you're like, nope, don't do that. No, we can't. And in that school setting where a teacher has multiple students, right? They have to tend to everyone, is just in getting that language going where you're saying what you do want them to do. And I'm not even going to address that not. So it's going to be kind of like where I'm ignoring it. We're not even going to address it. We're addressing the things that we do want to do. So, you know, kind of like where parents might be afraid of putting ideas into the heads of their child, is it may not be there and you don't have to worry. Just don't focus on that. Focus on what you can tell them. So you want to, you know, no, don't do this is going to just, it's saying where you're, there's no direction with that. And when you are saying it, it gives that action. And then when they're on their own, they can remember that, right? So they're going to remember, oh, mom said, don't run. Okay. In the what? But instead, they're going to say, oh, walking feet. So that's that simple one to go with. I go with that example a lot.
Yeah. No, that's a great one. So I have a question. How would puberty or sexual curiosity look different in our neurodiverse community with our neurodiverse children, students? And how does that kind of show up? And in what ways have you seen it show up? Or can you help guide us that may help teachers or grandparents or caregivers, parents?
Yeah, I think it might show up where they, let's say, like, we have access to the internet right at our palms and everything, right? So it might come out where they're Googling or searching something that you get scared for, right? So it might say, like, the search title, you're like, oh no, is that parent? Like, oh no. So that's how it might come out, because they are not going to want to run to mom and dad to talk about sex, but I can run to the internet or do something like that. So it might come out where they are searching something that you might see as inappropriate. appropriate or not, or like inappropriate, essentially. But think about how they're viewing it. They're just trying to get some more information.
The curiosity.
Yes, curious. The curiosity. Yeah. Yes. And the same thing is within this applies with all settings, is that I'm very big on advocating as well. Like if, say, another professional is like, oh, they were doing this, it's inappropriate. So if they are touching themselves down there, and I say, okay, what about it was inappropriate? Like, why, you know? And the answer might just be, because we don't do that. That's not okay. And so it's going into where they may be curious, they're learning about their body. And then also we want to, on the flip side, you don't want to give too much attention to it, because I know that some of our learners some of our parents that are listening have learners that are attention seeking, right? So they're doing something that is just to gain attention. So you're wanting to essentially always, you know, as a behavior analyst, I'm trying to find the function. A lot of the times within sexual education and within sex, it is that function is that automatic reinforcement, which means it feels good. It's a sensory feeling. It feels good. And so you want to make sure that you're also not giving too much attention where they are now engaging in that to gain attention. Hyper-focusing. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. So if you are looking like, when can I start talking about this with my child? Exactly how you said, you sat down with Tanner and his brother and talked about it explicitly. So you're sitting inside the home in that environment. It's not where we're always having to talk about it everywhere, but you do want for it to be comfortable to be brought up if we are somewhere. So another thing is this practicing that these, I do like lots of role playing. So if you're sitting down and explaining it, let's do a role play. I have a story, if you guys want, a story of like a role play that they did at a clinic before. And so like in this situation, it was not with sexual education, but it was stranger danger. This was not myself. It was a colleague, BCBA, and the team with the BCBA and the RBT. And they were practicing stranger danger so that the learner does not go into get in a car with somebody, you know, run off with anyone. He was a boy going through puberty and he liked pretty girls. So they practice it a lot. We practice it in the clinic. They practice it in the home environment. They did everything. We got him. He knew the right answers to say. So then they said, okay, the ultimate test is the role play. So they gathered another clinician from the clinic and had her like drive up and say like, hey, you know, do you want to come and get some ice cream with me? And mom, you know, this is all planned. Mom's there. Mom knows where they're in the car stakeout. And he was like, sure. And he got into the car and went with them. And then, you know, they drove around the block and then brought him home. And then we had to, you know, they had to deal with that. And so I say role playing is a big, big thing. So more than just like talking, using visuals, but let's practice that. You know, let's say your teacher comes and wants to do this. What are we going to do? Or let's say, like you said, you went to the doctor. What's some of the signs we can look for? So explicitly role playing that when we go out to the grocery store and we say, oh, if we feel something funny happening down there, what should we do? And that is, so see how I just asked it? It's asking it so that you're not just telling them. So remember, when we're in the grocery store and we feel something, go to the bathroom. You want to ask them to see how they're going to respond. And then, okay, show me, and have them do that action. Because, you know, very rarely are you having them do this. So you kind of role playing these situations. And you can't control everything, but the general things where you're like, you know, we might run into this. We go to the grocery store every week. This is a good area to do. We go to school every day. This is a good area to do.
Yeah, so in terms of, just to go back a little bit, if there is something like, you know, I worked in this field a little bit and I had a student I was working with and he was clearly learning about his body parts and knew the right words to say. And it was penis. Mm-hmm. And when I was trying to teach him, we were trying to write pen or something and he kept writing P-E-N-I and then he would look at me. And he would start to draw. And so I knew where he was going. And I remember just doing a neutral redirection and not like, so let's say your child is learning and again, it feels good. It's Thanksgiving dinner, all the cousins and the family, everyone's getting together and your neurodiverse child might be touching themselves or doing something. Is it just a neutral redirection and talk about it later or neutral redirection and just don't talk about it? What's a good strategy for if there's an inappropriate behavior and it's happening somewhere, how do you get everybody comfortable and their dignity staying intact?
Yeah. And I love what you said, dignity. That's a big thing, is that the focus. So if let's say we're at Thanksgiving dinner and that happens, the first thing is the thought process is my first focus is going to be the child rather than the comfort of the adults. And I say that a lot of times. I am very much where I'm advocating for the children, teens that I'm working for. And I you know, don't care as much for the comfort of the adults in this, because they are not the focus in this. So in that, I'd say that neutral redirection is good. And I'd say take those real life moments in the moment and do it right there and immediately rather than later, because that also then might seem like a shame thing. Like, hey, remember yesterday when you did so and so? This is what you could have or should have done, is almost like, oh man, okay. So instead, yeah, in that moment, a neutral, and if that is where you say, you know, you're addressing, oh, hey, I can see, let's remember, where can we go for this private thing? And then you take them and then talk about it and then bring them back into that environment in a positive way. So it's not going to be a shameful way. And then you're almost as if it like didn't even happen. So that might even take talking with the family members like, hey, family, we are learning our body. Remember, you all went through puberty. I know you did. So is my child. And we are learning. So also, if you do have a big family and you're looking like, what can I tell them? It's just very basic. Hey, if they do so-and-so, can you please just ignore it? I know that might be easier said than done, because every family member has their wants. They want to give their 2 cents. They want to say this. So kind of saying what your expectation is just that front line. And if you, it's kind of like that, see something, say something. So I'd say in that moment, use that as an opportunity, remembering not to shame it, and then continuing on.
So maybe like neutrally interrupt to a more appropriate space, like the bathroom, say this is, and capture the moment and then walk away. So it's not shamed, but the child has a plan.
Yes. And also so that they're not getting too much attention from that, because we don't want to reinforce it. Right. So we don't want it where they got attention from this and they're like, oh, I got auntie and uncle and everyone to look at me. This is great. They're never paying attention to me, but I did this and now they
are.
We're
doing this again at Christmas. Yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah. So
every holiday.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So just a neutral interruption to a more appropriate space that's quiet and private. Revisit the message. No shame. I know I keep breaking it down, but I recently ran into somebody in a really mm-hmm. strange way, and they were going through something very difficult where their daughter was in a public classroom and masturbating in the corner in front of all of the students.
Mm-hmm.
And the child got ripped out of the class, brought to the principal's office, mom was called. I mean, my heart was breaking, and I thought they need to do better.
Yeah. And that's why it's big. I'm big on trying to get that information over to the parents, over to the school side, to everyone, because everyone plays a role in this, right? Because in that setting, in that situation, the first thing is, so if you, let's say you're kind of in that situation, you're like, what would you have done in that? Is the first thing, right, the dignity of the child. So holding up a blanket, yes, contacting a parent just to let them know, but not in that reprimanding way. And then I think it's big on the parent to be able to speak up for their child and speak out for that, you know. And it's like I said, I know this is easier said than done. So hear me when I say this, because it is where you have to speak up for them, because that school, the environment, they may not know what to do either. You know, there are the rules and protocols to kind of follow. But then also you may have, they have to deal with all the other students, where the students might go home and say, you know, little so-and-so, she was doing this in the corner, and what is about that? And then now they have angry parents to deal with. So leave that to kind of like that school side to handle, and handle kind of what you're doing. And if they have any resources, ask. And if you know you're working on, say, hey, okay, how can you as a school help me in this situation so that we don't run into this again? This is some of the things that I'm doing in the home setting. How can we collaborate to make this more appropriate? And that might even be like, hey, first hold up a towel. If we see that they're doing it and we can't just immediately say, don't do that, we're not able to, holding up something for their dignity. Yes.
Some feel to just sort of minimize what people see. Okay.
Yes. Because a big part of that is the function, is where you're looking for the function, because are they doing this for the attention because everyone's looking, or are they doing this automatic? Yes. Yeah. It felt good. And hey, I like this. I feel good. You know what? Math is boring and I'm going to have a better time in the corner back there by myself.
Right.
Right. I think in this particular, like the antecedent was, I think it was not a regular day at school. Like it was games day. And I think the child was dysregulated out of the routine of the classroom. And I probably doesn't have friends and didn't have a place or didn't know what to do. I'm making some assumptions, but I think it was a day that wasn't a regular day in the class.
Okay.
And,
right.
And
right.
I, you know, I was just putting my, I said, maybe she's trying to regulate, you know, she's trying to help herself, like, you know. So it's these real life situations. And this is where my heart's going, and why when you started talking, I honestly, I'm not too far off of that experience. And that's why I was just like, wait, this is really important. Like,
yes,
parents need help.
Yeah. And you know what I'm really hearing too, it's like for all the parents who are before puberty and coming up onto it, it involves so much intentional parenting. I mean, that's what I'm like, you have got to intentionally parent this stuff. You can't wait for it to happen. You can't sit back and ignore it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm like, listening. I'm like, this is a lot of really well-planned, well-executed, well-thought-out parenting to really pull this off, you know, and it's something to take very, very seriously. And, you know, another thing I was thinking about that in retrospect, I think really helps. And I think it's a real problem for a lot of people right now is, you know, when your child's going through all that bombardment of hormones and the physical change and the emotional dysregulation on top of being neurodiverse, you've got to make sure that they are getting enough physical activity, particularly for boys. I think, you know, if they are going through the season where, I mean, they're having involuntary erections, they might be having wet dreams. I'm just being real blunt. Mm-hmm. All that is happening. And I mean, I remember thinking, good Lord, if one more person walks in my kitchen with a fart on, I'm going to lose freaking mind. I don't want to see it. But, you know, that's where, I mean, like, I think proactively parenting, like, are they getting enough exercise? Are they tired at night so they'll go to sleep? Are they overstimulated with technology? What's their nutrition like? I mean, you know, I mean, I think all those things are things.
It's the whole picture.
To help them help themselves, because the body's better regulated, they're going to have less of that. It's not going to be as much of a issue. So
yes, and when parents are facing now, which you, I think both of you didn't have to deal with as much before, with the whole cell phones and
technology.
The access to technology, know, even if you have those parental things, is that other kids might have access where they are showing or talking about this. So it's also teaching them about how to kind of talk with their friends, depending on their level of understanding, how to talk with other people. And because they might be also susceptible towards bullying, where, you know, a friend who looks like a friend is like, hey, you should go in front of that girl and show her your private part. That's what boys are supposed to do when they like a girl. So it's really making sure you're explicitly talking about that, because that can also happen too.
So that kind of leads me right to my next question, which really kind of goes to where our men are in life, Nikki, but also it really starts younger with situations like that. How can we teach consent? And especially, you know, for kids who may not easily read the social cues.
Right.
And that was the one thing, you know, and how can you help them? There's so many implied boundaries in especially when it gets to dating and intimacy and or even when you're starting to crush on somebody, if they like you or they don't like you. I got confused all the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, you never know.
I'm so confused.
How do we help with the consent thing? I have to say, I was so proud when I watched Connor on both seasons of the show. Every time he went to touch Emily or Georgie, he asked permission before he touched them. And I know, I don't know what I did, or I must have done something, but
you're
when there is this implied consent or they're just having trouble reading social cues, what are there concrete ways to help teach consent, to give consent, and also when to give consent, and also may I touch somebody?
Yes. I think in that is where exactly that, where we think it's implied, it's not implied. So we have to kind of first, we take out that word where this is not an implied boundary. If you're not in the neurodivergent crowd, then a lot of these unknown and social cues are happening around. So you're learning these things when just like going about society, you know, you're watching, you're learning, you're talking with your friends. So those concrete things can be where it's like that public and private. We're going to talk about this. Another resource that I think is really helpful is video modeling. So this is another like evidence base where you can video model, where you're watching a video of a situation and how they handled it. So that might be us watching a situation of someone asking them on a date, and we're watching what happens. And then we're going to actually kind of like pause and assess the video. So, hey, how did he look, or how does she look in that? Does she look happy or comfortable? So telling it, breaking it down in that way. And then what did they do in this video? And then that's where you bring it into that role play. So it definitely shows where what you were doing has absolutely been working with your sons, because Connor, you, as you saw on TV, you didn't prep him for that. You didn't tell him, hey, remember, you got to do this, you got to do that. He went on that date and he was able to remember to do that. So trusting that you are addressing this and that they're going to remember. The repetition is super important. Repetition can seem very boring and annoying to do, but I don't mind becoming a broken record because that repetition is going to be something that's going to be way more concrete to know, to understand. So when you're pairing it with maybe a visual model, maybe those video models, role playing in different situations, using if you have other siblings and other friends, if you're part of a mommy group, maybe you're saying, hey, you know what, guys? We have to tackle how to, just like when you're with kids, you tackle a lot of like playing and sharing, right? Everyone has to learn how to share. So same thing in terms of, you know, who are these other people I can maybe talk with and get some ideas and how their child is doing, or maybe can we like role play this situation out? So exactly that, we're going to have to put in maybe a little bit more extra work, but at the same time, don't be too overwhelmed, because if you're doing something, you're doing something, you're addressing it, you're going to learn as you go, and you might not get ahead of everything, but there might be a situation where, let's say we've been practicing A, B, and C, we come across D, we don't know what to do, but you know what? I did have the prerequisite of A, B, and C. So now I can understand how to go along with this.
Mm-hmm. You're amazing.
Yeah, thanks.
No, I mean, just like, oh.
I know. Like literally, I love talking about this. Like meeting with you guys was so, so amazing. Cause I was just like, oh my gosh. Like I, being just a person watching the show and seeing, like, I work in this field, you know, but I love what the show is doing, and it's reaching to crowds of people without disabilities. So people that have know someone with autism, and just like showing the light, like, you know, it's done so, so, so much.
It has.
I love that. I guess last thing, and again, I'm sorry if you have something, but I really want to know this, like, parents managing their own discomfort, getting out of their own ways, getting out of their own heads. Like Nikki, you said, like, I'm not going to repeat history. My kids aren't walking into adulthood with shame regarding their bodies. I want to address the parents, especially of our individuals in our community, the neurodiverse community. Can we please, not to put fear, but to put like purpose and the why behind we're doing this. What is the risk if they avoid these conversations? What is the risk? What could happen if they don't have these conversations on all sides? And maybe that's a good why of how to like learn how to put that discomfort and shame on a shelf and run toward the discomfort. Can you help tell us some of the risks?
Yeah. So some of the risks is where they might be in a situation where I said they are at a higher risk for abuse and exploitation. So not talking about this because, you know, you think it might not happen or you're scared to, is that they are at a higher risk for that. So even if you are the primary caretaker of your child, you know where they are all the time. Still, if they have to go to school or they have to do this and they're not with you on your arm 24/7. So they are at a risk of learning that wrong information and then doing something that would be essentially inappropriate in a legal sense that they just unaware of. So that might be where, you know, it's really sad to hear what the story is like. I'm trying to always educate everyone. So like the healthcare workers, you know, the fire department, the police department, when they come across someone who is neurodivergent and they're not responding immediately, is where you don't want them to come into a legal situation or something where they just didn't know. So it's kind of like, well, was this bad if you didn't know it was bad? So like in a general sense, you know, we know that I can, if I get mad at someone, I'm not supposed to go out and just punch them in the face because they, you know, did something I don't like. So I know that. But if you are not told that, then you may not know. So I think, and they're at a risk if you are with that, is where they might come into an unknown situation and you don't want to think, oh, no, I could have done something. So for some people, this may be completely new information. You might be like, oh no, I have a child with autism. I didn't even think of this. And that is okay. If you're listening, you made it this far in the podcast, you're learning. It might even be just you checking in and saying, hey, what's that body part called? Who can touch it? You know, so I think with that, because same thing where they may not know and you're learning as well. So just tackling it in some way. And if you do have anyone, any resources, like they do have a therapist, you went to your pediatrician, checking in with them. Have you worked with this? Do you have any resources? What can I do? Kind of like, don't be afraid to ask. That's been a big thing that, like, you know, that fear that holds us back is very much where, like, don't be afraid to ask. The worst you're going to get is no. You might get a weird look, but I personally, if I was the parent of that child, I'd rather get that than my child. You know, I'd rather me have a discomfort rather than them, because they are not even sometimes understanding that this is a discomfort. And then that can have them now engage in other behaviors where they now may now get aggressive towards you. They get shy and upset. They're going quiet. They don't want to talk to you about this. So I think that is that's important to try and just get ahead of it and really just thinking like, which would I rather, my own discomfort or for my child?
Yeah.
Easy answer.
Right.
Yeah.
Very intentional, forward-thinking parenting. You know, it really is. Like, what do I really want for their future?
Yes.
And it's hard. It's hard sometimes to think like that.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Because, you know, a lot of this is the physical, but there's also the emotional side. That whole understanding, like puberty is so weird. You're already trying to figure out life. So just throwing in that neurodiversion where you're just like, oh, this is so different. Yes.
Yeah. And Chalene, would you, I felt like, I don't know if it was like this for Connor, I felt like not a massive regression, but there was definitely elements of regression during puberty for Tanner, learning-wise, regulation-wise, behavior-wise. Are you seeing that with a lot of your kids who are in that puberty space?
Just
yes.
So that,
and like, no, not to be horrified or terrified if that happens to them. I definitely
Yes. Any new changes can bring any kind of regression. So a big thing is I always checking in, like I'll check in general, has there been any kind of big or traumatic life change? So that can be you move houses, a new baby, a new marriage, a new divorce. So that can be a life change. But then also they have that puberty change. So you might see those other areas where they are maybe regressing, and it's looking at them and your child as a whole picture. So you might be like, oh, they used to be more social and talk about these things. And now they may not be, because they're trying to figure out what the heck is going on with their body. You know, I can't ask you how is your day and tell you what I did yesterday, because I'm trying to figure out what's growing underneath me here.
Right. And why is their hair? Yeah.
The hair, you know, and then the comparisons where there's, you know, some people get hair sooner than others. So there's a lot of those comparisons. So you might see those other areas, and it's kind of like, let's say if someone's not eating, right? And they stop eating, you're like, what happens? You start to look into all the things. Is also just remembering, if you have a learner that's going through that puberty stage, and I'd say anywhere from like a fifth grade up, is that is going to be something as well. That can even be something out of your control. So let's say they go to school and everybody else doesn't have underarm hair, but now they have underarm hair, and that's not cool, especially, you know, as girls, you have to shave all the time. So I think checking in with that is because, like, it may be something that you're not even having control of, but it can still be happening.
Mm-hmm. No, it's so true, because I actually just unlocked a core memory when I was fifth grade, and I think I was starting to get body odor. But I didn't, like, it was new.
Yes.
And I remember being on the playground and in a circle of friends, and everyone went around and said, someone stinks. And they kept coming and sniffing me and running away. And I remember ran in and asked if I could go to the nurse, because I wanted to go home.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
It was me. I mean, it was me.
Right. And that's the thing, is that you know, you have that story and you're not even, you know, identifying.
I can still see that
someone.
Playground.
Yeah. So everyone has, you know, their own stories. And just think, like, if you, like, now looking back, let's say you're looking at little you and you're like, okay, I have this knowledge, I can help them feel with this or try. So, because we all have those stories of like, oh man, I remember this. And
I was the stinky kid. Yeah.
I remember I had to ask my mom, like, mom, can I shave my legs? Because all the other girls are. And I also didn't really even have hair on my legs. And so my mom was like, no. And so, you know, I was like, mom, I'm getting underarm hair. And so, you know, as a parent, you're trying to make sure that you're not turning your child into an adult at 10 years old and keep them on the right path. So, it's definitely
it's a balance.
Yes,
it is.
You know, I joke around. I always wanted to be a mom, couldn't wait to be a mom. And I always joke, after Connor was born, the credits rolled on my movie with me pushing his stroller into the sunset. Like, I was like, I was like, no, the fairy tale ended. I got my baby. Like,
I have a cute baby.
No.
Yes.
But you know what? I am so sad. I know I said I kind of had a hard stop today, and I'm like, I could talk to you for another hour.
Oh, yeah. We covered a lot. Yes. Yes. I do want for like listeners that's listening to not feel too overwhelmed. We covered a lot that, you know, just even just thinking about this and getting an understanding is a great place to start.
Yeah. Just bringing it to top of mind is a big deal.
It really is a big deal. But Shalini, is there somewhere, if you're comfortable, do you have any social following? If people have more questions for you, can they DM you? Do you have anything that you want to put out there and let people know where to find you?
Yeah, I do have my email address, and I can also post it. But it is my first name, Shalini, Shalini. And you can email me at Shalini@elevatealignbehavior.com. So that is just, you'll reach just me directly, but that's a good way to reach out to me. I don't have any specific social links that are specific to BCBA, just my own personal ones, but you can find me there, send an email. I'm on Facebook too. If anyone's still on Facebook, send me a message. That's a good one. If you see me on Instagram, you can, like, I'm accessible, but yeah, I think it definitely getting that information out there. I love just talking with people, meeting with you guys. I mean, it was a dream to see Connor and Tanner and then talking with you guys, and now coming onto the podcast is just great.
Well, this is a dream for me.
Oh, you are amazing. And we'll put that email in the show notes so people can find
it. Okay, great. Yeah.
That'd be
perfect. Well, Shalini, thank you so much. Nikki, is there anything else you want to add or throw in? Or
great, but part two, we might need you a part two at some point.
We really might. In fact, you know, listen, talk to me, sis listeners. If you have more questions, if you want like a part two Shalini, we want her back. Like, we can make this work. So
I'd love to come back. Yeah.
Let us know. Well, Shalini, I don't know if you watch us, but we always end with our little saying, and we're going to say it to you because
we love you, mean it.
Yes. Oh, good. The heart came out.
I love it.
Yours is cool.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you, guys.
We'll see you guys next time.
Lastly, everybody, if you liked hanging out with us today, do us a favor, hit the follow button, leave a rating, or drop a quick review. It helps more than you know. And if you really loved it, send it to a friend who needs to hear this. And if you're interested in sponsoring a future episode, please send us an email at talktomesismail@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and love you, Mina.